Washington. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the economy sheds 345,000 more jobs. The bad news? The hemorrhage continues. The good news is it's half as many jobs that were lost just a month ago. We'll get reaction from Illinois Congressman Peter Roskam, who sits on the House Ways and Means Committee, and get his reaction to just how effective the Obama stimulus plan has been. Also in this edition, the real story of terrorist interrogations. U.S. Army Captain and Intelligence Officer Jason Mazaros is the author of a new book, Interrogation of Morals. We'll find out exactly what he and his colleagues did in order to extract information from those captured during his time in Afghanistan. We'll also get his thoughts on whether Guantanamo Bay should stay open. Plus, playing politics over marriage. We'll speak with Maggie Gallagher, president of the National Organization for Marriage, and find out how the National Democratic Party pressured New Hampshire state lawmakers to approve gay marriage in the Granite State. We'll talk about that and the national marriage debate at large. And a Capital Steps double feature. This week, the group takes a look at the swine flu and the declining U.S. auto industry. All that, plus our top news at week's end, is straight ahead on Dateline Washington. We begin with Congressman Roskam on the economy, and we begin right now. My first guest in this edition is Illinois Congressman Peter Roskam. He's a Republican representing the land of Lincoln's 6th Congressional District, and he's a member of the powerful House Ways and Means Committee. We want to get his thoughts today as the Labor Department reports another dismal month, meaning the month of May, of job numbers, but this time it's a loss of about 345,000, which is a considerable drop from the number of jobs we've been losing in previous months. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, delighted.
Obviously, the trend is still not good, but some say that this is a good sign that the losses are slowing. What's your take?
Well, my sense is that, remember, the administration came in back during the stimulus debate and said that if we only voted for this package, that unemployment was going to peak at 8%. And here we are. We've blown right through 9%. And these are very, very serious numbers. And while this may be less bad, so to speak, than some anticipated, I think it's still pretty grim out there, and that the promised stimulus is really underperformed.
As you mentioned, Congressman, the overall national unemployment rate now 9.4%. And in terms of what the administration specifically promised, what did they say in addition to believing that unemployment would get no worse than 8% if, in fact, lawmakers got behind their package?
Well, remember, I mean, there was this drumbeat that was going on in Washington, D.C. during the stimulus debate. And while the numbers kept going higher and higher and higher, and the administration kept piling on more and more spending, the promises became greater and greater. In other words, members of Congress, House members, members of the Senate were promised, if you'll vote for this, then it's all going to change and it's all ultimately going to be great. And I think that it is just classically underperformed. Remember, this is a Congress and an administration that essentially spent $1 trillion in a weekend, $780+ billion in the outlay of the stimulus package, and then on top of that, an additional $300 billion in the interest payments that our children and grandchildren are going to pay, and we're right past $1 trillion, and for that, we get a 9.4% unemployment. I don't think it's what the American public signed up for.
Congressman, is it your assessment at this point that the stimulus has had a negative effect, or we just spent $1 trillion and it hasn't done anything?
Well, I think there's an argument that you may get sort of a short-term sugar buzz off of the spending, but the long-term crowd out in terms of economic prosperity for this country, I think, is unarguably going to be enormous, based on the debt burden. You know, the notion that somehow we are going to borrow and spend our way into prosperity makes absolutely no sense. And yet Washington, D.C. seems to be the only place in the country that really still believes that can be true. The rest of the country has kind of gotten the joke and understands that spending money that we don't have has gotten into this economic turmoil, and it makes absolutely no sense to suggest that doing the same thing is going to get us out of this turmoil.
The mantra of those supporting the stimulus package a number of months ago is that we have to do something substantial and we have to do it now. Yet now that we're, I guess, more than 3 months after the passage of the stimulus bill, the vast majority of that money hasn't even gone out yet, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and my predecessor in office was the great Henry Hyde, wonderful congressman, who famously told me, He said, look, there's one thing worse than gridlock, and the worst thing is the greased chute of government. So you see this rush to spend money in many times programs that have been announced. I heard recently of a community in another member's congressional district that was receiving a bus and literally didn't need the bus, didn't have a clear use for it, and was sort of in a quandary as to what to do with it. I am familiar with some counties in Illinois that have been notified that they're going to receive $1 million for funding of programs that they don't necessarily find helpful and aren't going to be priorities for them. So there was this rush, there was this drumbeat to move very, very quickly, a great deal of pressure, a lot of promises were made, and I think the American public and certainly the American taxpayer got the raw end of that deal.
Congressman, we've already mentioned the national unemployment rate surging past 9% now, and a lot of the urban unemployment rates are even higher than that, even into the double digits. I know you represent a district just outside Chicago. How would you describe the economic conditions of your constituents?
No, it's very, very significant. I represent a constituency in the west and northwest suburbs of Chicago, and the two big employment sectors in my area are financial services and manufacturing. Both of those sectors employ about 70,000 people. Both of those sectors are down significantly. The financial services sector, based on the credit market squeeze back in the fall, and on the manufacturing side, you know, the talk coming out of Washington in terms of this energy tax that the administration is advocating would just be a devastating blow to manufacturers in my area. I guess in a nutshell, folks that I represent are hoping to get some good news out of Washington. They're hoping to get some relief, but instead all they seem to see are these same old tired solutions that really were tried and failed back in the 70s, didn't get us out of a pretty significant economic turmoil, and yet the Democrat majority seems to be going back to these old habits.
Let's talk a little bit more about the energy bill that's making its way through Congress. I believe it's been approved now by the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Supporters call it cap and trade. Opponents call it cap and tax or a major energy tax. You just mentioned, sir, that you've got a large manufacturing base in your district. Get a little more specific, if you can, about how this policy, if approved, would impact those people as well as those who work for them and all consumers, really.
Well, here's the significance of it. At a time when the manufacturers in my district, and I think many American manufacturers, are really up against it in terms of competing overseas. They're competing in difficult currency markets where the Chinese, for example, have been manipulating their currency to get an advantage. Overseas, they have cheaper labor and a whole host of other advantages in terms of manufacturing, and yet our two biggest economic rivals in some way, that is China and India, have said they have no intention of participating in this cap and trade or cap and tax system. They're out. So the irony is that we are going to, if this policy comes to fruition, the federal government will be putting a burden on American manufacturers, the likes of which other manufacturers around the world are not going to be experiencing. And what that translates down to is, an economic advantage to manufacture in China, an economic advantage to manufacture in India and other sites throughout Asia. And I already have folks that are really struggling in the international marketplace, and they just don't need, you know, another bowling ball to hold on to while they're treading water.
Congressman, I know that during the stimulus debate, congressional Republicans had alternative plans that they say would have cost taxpayers half as much as the Obama and congressional Democratic plan and would have created twice as many jobs. What are you pushing now in terms of economic growth? If the Republicans were to get their agenda onto the floor, what would be the key principles that we'd be hearing about?
Well, back in the stimulus debate, what we said was, look, here is this other alternative, and it has to do with a whole host of things, particularly around small businesses, the entrepreneur, and the self-employed. That's where the action is. That's where 70% of the job creation is. So, you know, I went to the House floor, for example, and said, look, this should be a stop the presses moment, because there's an alternative that is here that Dr. Christina Romer, who is President Obama's chairman of his Council of Economic Advisors, using her peer-reviewed data analysis. That analysis formula says this plan comes up with twice the jobs at half the cost. We should take the stimulus bill out of the record, so to speak, and we should debate this new plan. If, in fact, there's no pride in authorship, let's go with the better plan that's going to create more jobs at less money. Well, obviously, that didn't happen. But I think what it did send was a signal that, look, Republicans are here. We've got substantive ideas. Take the next great thing that we're going to be talking about, for example, the health care debate. This is a situation that affects every American, not only each one of us individually, but a lion's share of our employers. And do we want to be moving into a system that the Democrats seem to be advocating? That is the type of system that puts more bureaucrats into the line as it relates to patient and physician, or do we want to reconnect patients and physicians to make decisions between themselves like Republicans want to do? And this is look for this debate to be moving forward in these next several months, certainly in Washington before the August recess.
Congressman, about 30 seconds left here. The president said he wants a health care bill on his desk, I believe, by the end of July or the 1st of August, right around that time. Do you sense that you'll be able to bring enough people together to slow down the version that would be a public option that many say would crowd out private health coverage?
Yeah, the public option is nothing short of a disaster. It's a prelude to socialized medicine, and I think it's a deal breaker. Every Republican that I've talked to has said if a public option is in the mix, then they're not going to be supporting that bill.
So we'll see how the debate plays out. Congressman, thank you very much for being with us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Illinois Congressman Peter Roskin represents his state's 6th Congressional District, member of the House Ways and Means Committee. This is Dateline Washington.